Greetings, my friends. Welcome to the next episode of the Mint Mob Podcast, the first episode of 2026. I'm joined by my buddy Alex over in Germany. We're going to jump into whatever comes to his imagination today, apparently. I do not know the topic, so we'll see what he has planned. What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm great. I'm actually a little surprised because I think I'd need to go back like 100 episodes, but that was like the first time you changed the introduction sentence, right? I'm not from across the pond today, so I was a little confused. But yeah, everything is great. You mentioned it, first episode of 2026. I think I could not have imagined a better ending of 2025. Seven Dawn series, really beautiful art that was being dropped. And I think one thing that can be mentioned that, you know, most collectors do not even see, besides all the great art we mint, we built so many great relationships, right, and great connections. So we have been in touch with all the artists. Of course, there were many new artists participating. And on top of that, you know, with, you know, every one of you guys sharing all this stuff, that's obviously much appreciated. And, you know, all the artists telling people how they, you know, appreciated working with us and that they enjoyed the collaboration. There are many eyes on us during this series, and that leads to, you know, new artists who are, you know, not familiar with what we usually do, reach out to us and DM us and asking whether a collaboration is possible. And that's actually so good, right? Like, especially looking back 2 years when I had to jump into everyone's DMs, begging people if they'd give us a chance, like, hey, we got something that we call like the artist incubator. Do you want to be a part of it? And everyone was like, yeah, only if you pay me in advance, right? Like everyone was like trying to make money, and they kind of did not believe that we were genuine, right? And now we got to the point where artists are actually reaching out to us, wanting to collaborate. And this is definitely a good development, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. It makes life easier in terms of, you know, setting up projects and building reputation. And, you know, to be clear, I mean, we do pay our artists. So, you know, I mean, the issue is never about payment. It's about trust and just, you know, people wanting to get paid up front because they weren't sure if they were going to get paid on the back end. That's perfectly understandable in a market like NFTs, where so many artists have been screwed left and right. And so, you know, we had to overcome that negative stigma, I guess you would say. And, you know, of course, literally every piece that's in the gallery has been a piece that we've bought and paid for, that we've secured IP rights to, with the exception of maybe one. Did we ever get paperwork on Jake? I do not know. And other than that, it's been very professional, you know, a growing, expanding library, growing, expanding collection of people and contributors. And it's been a good ride. So I think we can only expand upon that in 2026 if we continue to do the right things, treat people well, you know, pay the artists what they're worth, you know, take care of collectors, continue to build those relationships. I mean, that's really what it's all about.
Absolutely. But that situation kind of reminded me of, you know, the very first beginning when we started and we had that great idea to, you know, trying to, to target even users of or collectors of the former project, right? And so we had to struggle with people and trying to, you know, still attract them to what we are planning to do. So that's interesting, right? Like I feel like with all the stuff we do, because even nowadays, right, like we are seeking quality collectors, we are going through the space, we're trying to build these relationships when someone crosses our ways, and we're trying to build these genuine connections. But at some point, you know, that will shift as well, and people will desperately, quote unquote, try to become part of that exclusive club, right? That's what people do not understand. Like bosses, there are only 100 inscribed bosses in the Goodfellas universe right now, and there will never be, you know, at least like these origin bosses that have been minted in August 2023. So I feel like, you know, we will reach that point where, you know, things or people will realize that actually, you know, focusing on collections that are genuine and do good work consistently that this pays off, and then people will try to be part of that. Because like that's actually what I think when I look at all these people collecting art on weird chains, right? Like I feel like, why do you collect art on a chain that is most likely going to be not around in 5 years from now, right? And I think this is obviously the reason why we chose Solana. But yeah, where do you see all these things moving? I mean, we always speak about, you know, things consolidating to quality, but do you think all artists at some point will have to move to big chains?
I don't think artists will have to necessarily move to big chains. I think big chains will naturally evolve from the ecosystem because, again, there is a flight to quality. It's been on now probably for at least a year by people who are paying attention. The rest of the people will start to catch up. You know, usually it's late, and you'll see that happen as well. But, you know, the third and fourth and fifth tier chains, I mean, all of these chains, unless they can find a use case, because again, a blockchain is just a database. That's all it is. It's just a public database. So if we have, you know, a specific use case for a public database branded as X or branded as Y, then it will be used, provided people see the value in it. If there's no value seen in it, they won't use it and it'll fall by the wayside. And the hopium will continue to subside, and people will continue to come to their senses around what it is that they're actually buying, you know, because most of the people who are on a specific chain probably ended up buying a token early and were basically, you know, sort of locked in with sunk costs about their time and their experience and their funds in a specific token probably to begin with. And then they started learning about the chains after. And so a lot of this market was basically set up almost like, you know, IPOs, but much, much worse. They were basically set up as blind IPOs where people didn't really know anything about the founders, didn't really know anything about what the plans were other than some esoteric, you know, vague rogue map that, you know, was always broken and never followed. I mean, all of these different things that produced what we have now are slowly becoming passe, and that's continuing to accelerate as people understand that, you know what, I should have paid attention. I should have, you know, really vetted these people. I should have taken a closer look at this technology. I should have taken a look to see if this is something that people would even want to use in the first place, or if the development team had any plans beyond throwing up some ridiculous roadmap that is duplicated five times over on six different chains. I mean, it doesn't really matter. All that really matters is that the quality continues to rise and people will continue to go to that. So our job as, you know, founders at Goodfellas is just to continue to instill value in the project. And so when you talk about 100 bosses, most people won't know what that means. They haven't done the time or they haven't put in the effort to figure it out, right? Most people won't understand what we're doing when we have multiple collections outside of our original art. And so it takes time to explain these things. And of course, you and I have to do a really good job of making sure that we communicate that well and continue to build relationships. And of course, now that the bosses have been around and learned a little bit about the mindsets and the, you know, the direction that we want to take the project, a lot of them are evangelizing for us, which is a good thing. It tells us that we have people who believe in what's happening here and see the progress, you know, and in fact, like on the last spaces, when we had a couple people come up who hadn't necessarily spoken before, you know, the first comment was, the comments that stand out to me were the ones that were around, you know, we see you moving, we see you creating, we see you building, and where so many other projects don't. And we, you know, we really appreciate that. And the thing about that that's so strange and so wonderful at the same time is that it shouldn't be strange, right, for you to create an organization that promises to build something or that makes a commitment to build and then builds. Like, it's literally just following through. It's just being a responsible human being, and there's no magic there. But when the bar is so low, people highlight things like that, and it's almost as if, what are we celebrating? Like, we, you and I, you know, coming from the real world and real responsibilities in the real world, understand that if I tell you I'm going to do something, I'm going to do everything in my power to make it happen. Now, it doesn't mean I'm always going to be 100%. I mean, I might miss. Of course, I'm human. I'm going to make mistakes. But for the most part, what we've said we were going to create, we've created, and we've put a lot of energy and effort and time and money in doing so. And so that's not going to slow down anytime soon. And so people who care about what we're doing and the people who have eyes on what we're doing will continue to see that consistency. And as they continue to see that consistency, it becomes more and more difficult. If we're doing something that they enjoy or that they want to see brought to life, it becomes more and more difficult for them to stay out of the project than it does to come into the project. Because, you know, the field of projects out there is just a minefield of nonsense in most cases, you know. And it's really interesting. There's a lot of delusion, and, you know, we can talk about that maybe in a separate question or even a different podcast, but people will continue to go. people will continue to go where their money and their time and their investment is best spent. That's really what it comes down to.
Absolutely. And it's actually quite interesting because a couple months ago, I got a DM on my ex, and someone was like, nowadays, I know it was probably a scam, but he was basically like pretending he wanted to interview us or something, right? Now I got plenty of those emails, so I realized, okay, he was probably up to no good, but he was asking some questions, right? And what I just realized is that when he asked about like, hey, what's your utility? I think the only thing I answered was like, you're bringing quality art to quality collectors. But then he tried to, you know, ask a little deeper, and I realized, man, like trying to explain to someone who has no idea about your project, about all we do, right? Starting with the main collections, then the sirens, then, you know, 21s, like what's the reason behind that? Why do we have Marvel characters? And then there is like some piece, like what else do we have? Like the soldier or the Halloween pieces, all that stuff. And then we have the artist incubator. You know, I think there are some people out there who believe that all we do is the artist incubator, because, you know, they see that, they see us basically showcasing and collaborating with artists, and they feel like, okay, that's what the good fellas do. And there are so many different kind of things we do that it's actually not that easy to like, if someone asks me, I need to be like, hey, do you got like 2 hours of time so I can actually explain you, right? So yeah, of course, we are working on providing better platforms in 2026 to, you know, for people to research what we do. That's like one main goal we actually discussed yesterday on our very long meeting, you know, to update the website and get everything ready. Yeah, that's great. But one thing you mentioned in the very beginning regarding, you know, the chains and crypto projects, I saw so many crypto projects recently surrender, even like real, real big ones. I think there was like one called Veracity or something. I think they didn't surrender, but what they did is they made like a big announcement and said like, hey guys, we are going to increase the supply by, I think it was like the old supply times 16 or something. And then we'll have another token in addition to that with a supply of 10 billion. And whoever held until now will get like an airdrop, blah, blah, blah. Everyone was extremely, you know, mad about them, right? And their token dumped again, and it's like down to, I don't know, 8 million market cap or 5 million or whatever. At some point, it was around 1 billion. And now people get into the comments, and, you know, those are the guys who still believe there might be an altcoin season at some point, right? So they had to start realizing my money is gone. And then there are so many posts of people saying like, hey man, I lost 50,000 bucks in the project, or my 700,000 bucks are worth like 50 bucks now, right? And I think if markets continue to be the way they are right now, there will be many more projects capitulating, right? And go to zero. That's what we've been saying for so many years, actually. But people realizing that there is not going to be some miracle altcoin season where every altcoin is going to make like 100x, and, you know, actually having to realize the losses, do you think this is something that could, at least in the short term, harm the crypto markets, right? Like when so many people lose so much money and they actually have to accept that it's like not coming back?
Do I think that's going to be a problem? Or do I think that's going to be an eventuality?
Yeah, I mean, of course, like when you look at all these investors, you know, they're making it public, right? Like this is what's going through the news. So many people lost money. You can see it all around X. So I hate the word retail by now. Everyone is speaking about retail here, retail there, but you know, they might get, you know, scared and flee into gold and silver, which are like obviously doing very good right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately the market as it exists today is becoming a mature market very quickly. You know, we had a couple announcements recently this week where you had the Fed chair basically acknowledge that crypto is a thing. You've had the Trump administration fighting for positive regulation and innovation in the crypto market and Web3 market. And we've had this in sharp contrast to what existed previously with the Biden administration, where you basically had crypto under attack. Like it's basically, you know, money laundering scheme, and it was this and that was the other thing. It's just, you know, it's just all this negative stuff. And they actively sought to basically limit what you could or couldn't do in Web3, largely out of control, because that's what the left basically desires. They want to control everything, you know. So at the end of the day, like we've got a positive or favorable administration. We've got a Federal Reserve that's basically being forced to capitulate because the economy hasn't been what they wanted it to be. So we're dropping interest rates. Prices of real things are going to continue to go up. And that's the only option because they're going to continue to print money. Gold and silver, I mean, silver peaked up over $80 a couple weeks ago. It was almost 80 last night when I went to bed. I own silver, so I'm watching it. Gold was at like 44. I own gold, so I was watching it. But do I think that anything is going to outpace like Bitcoin or Solana or even Ethereum? No, not even close. So, you know, it's fun to see these run-ups. I mean, I sold silver early or like middle part of last year at around $30 an ounce. And today it's more than double. And so I was going to ride it up. And then when it started going crazy, I was like, well, you know, I'll hold on to it and see how far up it goes before I start selling. But you know, at the end of the day, like people are going to go where their money and their capital and their time is treated best. And you will have to finally face the music on some of these ridiculous nonsense projects and chains that have just duplicated one another and have basically been almost like a vacuum to quality in the space. So, you know, on all of these different chains, there are good quality people. You know, there are people who really care. There are people who really want to invest their time and energy. There are people who want to see the projects or the chains or the NFTs be successful. And unfortunately, when you have thousands of these things, you know, which is where we are in the space right now, the good people get diluted amongst them. So just like the bad people get diluted amongst them, but because the good people and the smart people, you know, the people you really want in your project are a much smaller percentage of the total pie. When these chains start to consolidate, assuming those people don't quit the market, they will look to not repeat their same mistakes. You know, intelligence is your ability to learn, right? So if you're an intelligent person, if you learn from your mistakes, you're not an intelligent person if you don't, right? And, you know, the definition of success is getting what you want out of life. So if you're in this space and you're a smart person and what you want out of life is to collect good things and be, you know, around people who actually care and want to see success happen for not just the project, but for all of the collectors and all of the holders, then you're going to seek those people out. You're going to learn that lesson and you're going to go find what you want to make real. And those are the people that we're trying to find, that we continue to look for across the Web3 NFT sphere. And, you know, they keep popping up here and there and here and there and here and there. And what ultimately happens is the reputation precedes you and, you know, enough people start to build into the organic sort of mouthpiece out there in X or wherever you're posting. And those people sort of start gravitating towards you slowly, 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 slowly. And it takes a long time. But then it's like one of those things, right? Like it's slowly, 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 and then all at once. Like slowly, 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 and then all at once. And that's kind of how this market works. I mean, you know, you can look at any market, and when things become evident, that's when people gravitate toward a thing. And so right now, what you saw with artists reaching out to us, it's become evident now in the artist, in the art world, that if you want to sell out, if you want to get paid for your work, if you want to be honored by a group of collectors, you talk to those guys at Goodfellas, because that's what they're going to do with the AI, right? And then when it comes to the other things, it's not going to matter. All of the promises, all of the talk, all of the hype, all of the BS that people spouted off for years and years, none of that stuff's going to matter. It's just going to continue to, you're just going to continue to see this flight to quality. Smart people will learn the lesson. Stupid people will quit or repeat the lesson. And what's happened, what will happen is all of these, you know, third, fourth, and fifth tier chains will continue to lose user base, lose, you know, any potential to be anything other than what they are. And you'll, you know, you'll see the market get smaller, which is really what we want in terms of like all of this product offering. There's just too many chains, you know, like too many projects doing the same thing. It's just, it's ridiculous at this point.
When you spoke about, you know, actually quality people on all quality people being on all these different chains, I immediately had to think of Stargaze, right? Like we've been in touch with people from over there for quite some time back then when we launched the Sirens, and we realized like, hey, there are actually so many good people on there. Ultimately Stargaze died. I'm not sure if the chain is still, if it still exists and is like operating or not. But I think many people left in the end. And you know, when I looked at like Brady or all these people from Stargaze, I always wondered like, or even right now I'm looking at myself and I wonder like, am I blind to some degree? Because like, obviously I'm like saying Solana is great, right? And I don't think that I'm smarter than, you know, the people that we talked to from Stargaze. So they were very confident that Stargaze is a good chain, right? Then there are other people like, I don't know, we keep speaking to Jilly, for example. She's like a big fan of Ethereum, right? Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, what's like the psychological reason behind all of us being confident in, you know, like in whatever we do and the chains we are operating on, while like, I mean, objectively, if you look at Solana, it has like the most potential in my opinion. But there are probably some people from Ripple who say that Ripple has the most potential. No, not from Ripple, probably, but maybe from ADA or whatever. And then I feel like, do we kind of, you know, only select the news or the information we want to see? And that's why I feel like Solana is so good. And there is like also like the opposite side. And there are many, you know, things I don't see, I don't want to see that are, you know, bad or not looking good. Or what do you think is like psychologically the reason why people behave like this?
I mean, it's just tribalism, really, when it comes down to it, right? I mean, you invest time, you build relationships, you know, over time, you realize that it's not just your money that you've put at risk; it's also a portion of your life. You know, it's like being in a bad relationship. Yeah. You know. Or being at a bad job that you've been at for 5 years. Well, why are you at the same bad job? You know, well,
yeah, but you know, but at least people say that, you know, they are like, I hate my job, but I have to go there to pay my bills, right? But, you know, people in bad NFT projects, for example, they're convinced that it's actually a good one.
Well, not necessarily. Like if you use the Stargaze example, there was a lot of people who were complaining, you know, like, what are you guys doing? Why is this happening? You know, this isn't the right move, blah, 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 right? And then, of course, Stargaze being a Cosmos chain is everything's a vote, right? So we're going to vote on it because we don't know how to lead. So we're just going to vote on every little thing. Well, you know, what color is the logo? Let's have a vote. Like, it doesn't matter, you know, like at the end of the day, you know, sunk cost is a real thing. And humans are notoriously slow to change and notoriously slow to embrace any form of change, because it basically means letting go of yourself. You know, so what you know, if you've been a Stargaze guy, and I'm picking on Stargaze, but you know, you could pick a chain, or you know, Polkadot guy, a Cardano guy, you know, whatever. Doesn't really matter the chain. Like, there's a tribe there, and that tribe has put in a lot of energy and effort, a big chunk of their life force, and you know, a lot of these spaces or these interactions are just people coming together to reassure one another. It's like, are you still in? I'm still in. Are you still in? I'm still in. Yeah, man, we're going to do this. LFG exclamation point. It's just the most ridiculous nonsense. But it's at the same time, it's to be expected because this is how humans behave. Like, we don't want to know that we're wrong. We don't want to know that we made a bad decision. We don't want to know that we've wasted 3 years or 4 years or 5 years on a chain that's going to zero. You know, we don't want to have to move our art projects or our, you know, code projects to another chain. We don't want to have to learn how to code something new. We don't want to have to explain it to the world. You know, we don't want to have to admit that we made a bad decision. But the thing is, like, the faster you can admit a bad decision, you know, the better off you're going to be and the faster you can move forward. So, you know, I look at what's happening in the marketplace and I see people, like good people. If you remember Tony from Women of Fada, for example, and I know some of the people who, you know, listen to our podcast will know that project. They partnered with a bunch of other projects and basically created a sort of a collective of founders or what have you. And Tony was kind of sitting at the top of that. And he just disappeared like 6 months ago. Like, no one's seen or heard from him. And that's not like him. So, you know, I was talking to one of the guys and they're like, oh, well, we think he had cancer. And, you know, there's a real, you know, possibility that he's just unwell. And I was like, dude, I get that. That sucks, you know. But you've got 6-7 different, you know, groups of collectors here in this one organization then, and he's holding all the keys. Like, you guys have literally fucked yourself really badly here. And, you know, I don't know if they've made, I don't know how much of that has been shared publicly, and I don't know the truth. This is just, you know, what's been said. But when someone has that much at stake, that many people, you know, in contact with them, and then just disappears, that's not a good thing. You know, these are the types of things that you can't have happening in an organization. So, like, if, you know, if you finalize a business, there has to be no key man risk when it comes to, like, all of the important stuff. You know, you cannot have key man risk. And, you know, Web3 has been nothing but key man risk. I mean, how many projects have you been in where, oh, the artwork was great, and then all of a sudden the artist woke up one day and, you know, had a stomach ache and decided to quit life. You know, it's just ridiculous. So I feel like as long as we have the tribalism, and this isn't just Web3, this is everywhere in the world, like these factions, these tribes. I mean, as long as that is the priority and not doing good, responsible things and treating people in a win-win way, then what you get is this nonsense where people stay stuck in a project or on a chain for way too long until it's just obvious that it's going to be a complete flop. When they could have just looked at the writing on the wall and saw, okay, well, Bitcoin's not going anywhere. You know, Ethereum is kind of like the king of, you know, smart contracts. They were the first platform to offer up smart contracts, and everybody built on them for the first 3 to 5 years. And then Solana came on and took all of the great stuff of Ethereum and all of the great stuff of these numerous L2s and made it one singular chain. So you don't have to switch between tokens and shovel this here and shovel that there. So, I mean, there's really obvious plays in the marketplace, both good and bad, but you have to actually separate yourself from the tribe long enough to understand, okay, I have wasted my time and I don't need to show up to the nether spaces to have someone tell me, oh, dude, you know, you're good, man. We're going to be good. You know, just separate yourself and look at the facts and start looking at the facts over the fields, and things will start to make a lot more sense and life will work out a lot smoother. And not just in fucking NFTs and in Web3, but in all aspects of your life, from relationships to business to, you know, job situations.
Why do you think having the community vote is a bad thing? I mean, it works good in Switzerland, right?
I don't know, does it? I don't live in Switzerland. It's not that it's a bad thing. It comes down to the efficacy of a thing, right? We humans tend to use words like good and bad. You know, like, I don't know, you might say, you know, broccoli is good, but candy bars are bad, right? But the truth is, broccoli is an effective food if you want to lose weight. You know, candy bars are not an effective food in terms of weight loss, right? But if I want to run a marathon, I'm not going to eat a piece of broccoli. I want a candy bar because I need all those calories, right? So in that particular moment, the candy bar is the most effective food, right? So, I mean, when you pair these things out, you forget good or bad, just look at effective. Is it effective to vote on literally every single thing? No, it's not. Because the truth is you're going to get people voting who know nothing about the project and who know nothing about your plans, who don't understand what it is you want to create. And then you're also going to get people on both sides of that, right? You'll have people who vote yes out of ignorance, and you have people who vote no out of ignorance. And in both cases, they're wrong. So what you really want to do is have leadership and then survey your people. It's like, okay, well, I bought into this project because I believed in what the vision of the founder was. So why would I sort of low level that vision down to the vision of a quote unquote democratic vote? It doesn't make any sense. Like, these people didn't have the vision. So why are we asking them, right? Let's talk to the guy who had the vision or the girl who had the vision, and then let's survey the people. Let's take a poll. Let's find out what people are thinking. Let's get advice. Let's, you know, not operate in a vacuum. Let's take in all of these different opinions, and then let's weigh them against all the facts that we know, against the vision that we want to make real. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't vote or can't vote. It just means that it's not always an effective thing. And when it comes to business and building organizations, it's almost never an effective thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. When was the last time you ate a candy bar?
That's been a while.
I mean, even if that comparison, like, I don't think that's what people mean when they say candy bar is bad. I mean, you could eat a banana instead, right? And still get that quick energy.
You could, but I mean, again, like, if we use the example, right, and we stick with the idea of being effective, like, sure, the banana is great. Banana is probably going to be like 80 or 90 calories. But if I eat a Snickers bar that's like 20 grams of protein and like 220 calories, I'm going to need the 220 calories to get through the race. You know, I'm going to need those calories, right? So I want the more calorie dense food than not, right? So yeah, I mean, they're both effective, but again, you get into degrees of what's more effective now. Right? Is it more effective to have the banana if you're going to run 20 miles, or is it more effective to have the Snickers bar if you're going to run 20 miles? You definitely need that Snickers bar.
True. You mentioned a couple minutes ago that we got great news for crypto from the Trump administration, I think. When I just did some research, I tried to see if there are some crypto news, you know. All I saw is, you know, mm-hmm. Trump is busy invading countries, kidnapping presidents for some reason right now. But I saw that Mexico is kind of worried about, you know, the same happening to them as well. I'm not sure if that's even like possible, but yeah, pretty cool what Trump did. I mean, if I had like a team, if that was like some sort of football team, I'd want to have Trump on my team. Like, mm-hmm. It's crazy, right? Like, it's actually so good for the United States what he does, right?
Yeah, and in this case, it's super good for for Venezuela. You know, like, if you look at the Venezuelan population, you know, 95% of people are in the streets shouting and cheering. I was literally watching videos of like grown men crying on the couch because their kid wasn't going to have to grow up under Maduro. You know, I mean, like, this is one of those situations where you have people who are disconnected from reality talking about kidnapping. When the truth is, like, Maduro was never a duly elected official of Venezuela, and any Venezuelan will tell you that, except for the ones who were hired by Maduro. So, you know, it's not like they deposed a legally elected official. You know, it could have been done differently, maybe. You know, every administration prior to Trump had 25 years to figure it out, right? So a whole generation of people grew up under this asshat, and, you know, Trump went in and said, no, enough is enough. And so, I mean, we'll see what happens. I'm not, I'm not the biggest fan of Trump's language and that sort of thing. But when it comes to getting things done, if you put a businessman in government, a businessman is going to have more of an incentive to get things done, because that's how business gets done. government is about like yelling at each other and doing nothing. And so when you have someone like a Trump step in there, it just throws everything off from a dynamic standpoint, because they're used to not doing anything and just talking and talking and talking and talking and talking and wasting money, just like we've seen in Minnesota and California and all these other liberal cesspools. At the end of the day, like, I'm for what works. And again, this comes back to the voting thing, like the, you know, in the projects, like if the vote works, you do the vote, right? If the vote doesn't work, and I haven't seen many of them working for many different things in the projects, then don't do the vote, right? Just don't keep doing what doesn't work, right? So like, when you look across the globe and you see, you know, people literally cheering in the streets, like throwing parades, celebrating, crying over the fact that their loved ones aren't going to be kidnapped or, you know, murdered in a back alley by some secret police dickhead, then, I mean, hey, who am I to tell Venezuela that it's the wrong thing? I don't live in Venezuela. I don't have any skin in the game. So if those people are celebrating, then I'm celebrating, because they know a lot more about their country than I do. And for me to sit back and watch all these like upper middle class white liberals like whine and moan and complain about, you know, dictators being taken out of the country after, you know, 3 months ago they were talking about no kings and doing a no kings protest. It's like, make up your mind. Do you want kings or do you not want kings? Like, just decide which side of the fence you want to be on, you know? And so it's like, it's just the ultimate contradiction, you know? Like, you have to have logical consistency in the way that you think and move through the world. And whether you're right or left, what you're doing has to be effective. And so that's why, you know, I don't vote party. You know, I've never been one of those party people. And again, like, people vote party out of tribalism, just the same way they vote inside these projects. And, you know, whether you're a Cosmos or a Polka Dot or whatever, if it's about being part of the group, then you can't dissent. This is the issue, right? If you want to build a group, the group is built on consensus and values that are shared, not on dissent. And when you have groups of people who have sunk costs and they can't dissent out of fear of being ostracized, then you really get bad results. So this is why the individual matters more than the collective.
Yeah, let's also jump a little bit into NFTs and the Goodfellas. You mentioned on Discord that we had a very long meeting yesterday. We haven't you know, nailed down anything in terms of mint plans or something, but one thing came to my mind that I wanted to talk to you about, as you are like obviously the artist behind the 21s pieces. And of course we have that big thing going on around May the 4th, right? With, you know, the whole Star Wars lore, which is probably my favorite part of the year when it comes to, you know, 21s pieces, because that's always great. Then we have, of course, you know, with these Halloween pieces. I think last time we skipped because of October. But we already got plenty of 21s pieces, you know, Halloween themed. Is there any kind of universe you'd like to step in when it comes to 21s pieces, where you feel like we could have that, you know, on a certain date every year, that you feel like that fits to the project or that you would love to create?
I love all those pop culture things, man. This is kind of funny. Like, you go from Web3 to politics, and now you want to talk about arts. It's like, yeah, it's pretty wild. But yeah,
I actually wanted to talk to you about Stranger Things, but you haven't seen the final.
I haven't seen it yet, man. Yeah,
and but, like, there was like one thing in the final that I really felt like that was so off that. Are you one who cares about spoilers?
No, I don't care about spoilers. I've never understood that, actually.
There is that main character who, like, Will, obviously.
Yeah.
And he has, like, his big, you know, scene becoming a hero in the end. But for some reason, the Duffer brothers felt like it's needed that he has his big coming out scene, you know, in the final episode where he, you know, gets everyone around him and he's like, I don't like girls. And then he finds his power after, right, like, after he... he, you know, told everyone, and I was like, why the fuck? Like, this is like why Disney was hated for so long, right? So, oh man, that was quite annoying. But yeah, answer the NFT question first.
What was the NFT question? I don't even know. Oh yeah, pop culture. I mean, all the pop culture stuff is awesome. I mean, I love that stuff for the most part, and I could definitely see, you know, incorporating so many different elements of it. I mean, the thing is, it's a really popular thing to do right now for people who do characters. They'll, you know, gravitate toward a particular pop culture icon and then like put that icon in the form of their character. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where when I do those pieces, I like for them to be a little bit different. I like for them to have a little bit of a like a Goodfellas flair to them, and not be quite done so obviously. You know, a lot of times with the character art, it's always the same pose, it's always the same shapes, blah blah blah. So with that type of stuff, I could totally see doing more like the Han type stuff, the Han Chewie type stuff, where it's just kind of funny. You know, Han's in a different pose, you know, and Chewie's kind of like this comic relief in the character, like stuff like that. You know, I see a lot of potential in, and whether it's like Matrix or Star Wars or, you know, Predator, you know, like pick your favorite, you know, like pop culture icon from the last 30, 40 years. Most people know them because they just continue to get remade and remade and remade, you know. So yeah, I mean, there's a ton of stuff that I would love to see done. No shortage.
What do you think is like big enough to have it? Like, obviously you could expand the Marvel stuff, right? Like we got like Wolverine. I think I read that one of the biggest franchises is something like Harry Potter. But imagine Harry Potter in the Goodfellas. Like, how would that look?
Yeah,
that'd actually be pretty funny. You could do Voldemort, right?
Probably, yeah. I mean, you can do them all. It's just a matter of execution, and that's the challenge. You know, especially when you have a character that has strong facial features and you're doing characters that don't have faces. So you have to find a way to incorporate it in a way that makes sense, and that's the challenge. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's the challenge of any piece of art. Like, the composition is everything. The idea is, you know, I don't want to say useless, but if you can't execute your idea is useless. So, you know, if you start putting things on paper and it doesn't work, you know, which happens a lot when you're doing a piece of art and you start over. I mean, Daria talked about this. Maria talked about this on the spaces when we were doing Seven Dawns, right? Like having to redo a piece and like thinking about it in different ways and changing the shape of the character. And, you know, all of these different things form the composition, and the composition speaks. So what I see a lot of in like the pop culture stuff is people will appropriate the different, you know, sort of cues, but the piece doesn't speak. It's just kind of dead. It's just kind of there. it's almost like a costume, whereas I would like to see the character be represented as like a living, emotive type thing, you know. When I did the Han piece, for example, and he's got that pose where he's like shooting, he's like in action, you know. He's not just sitting there wearing a Han costume, right? Like, it's Han-ish, but it's Goodfellas, you know, it's a Goodfellas style that's in the form of this Han-like character, and it's alive. it's in motion. And the same thing with like the Chewie character, where he's laughing and like he's got his sucker, his lollipop, whatever you want to call it. You know, like making the pieces look alive. The Wolverine piece that I did with the crossed claws, that comes from a really old comic cover that was popular back when I was a kid. And it represents, you know, one of his key sort of emotive, I guess, modes, you would say, like modes of being. When he does that, it's like, you know, he's always snarling. He's always has like this motion in his face. So it's almost like you're putting motion in the character by giving it a little bit of its true essence, but you can't do it using the face. So for us, that's the big challenge, really.
Like, I think what you just mentioned is why Luke, no, it's not Luke. What the fuck am I speaking about? Like Han Solo? Solo? Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Why that piece stays out, like it's like outstanding, because I love the motion part about it. I think it's like the first time we ever done that, right? Like, obviously we had the animated pieces that was like a little different, but I'd love to see that being incorporated more often, right? Like let's see, if you had like, I don't know, a Harry Potter-ish theme. Like you could have him move his magic stick or something, right? Like with his scar on his forehead and all that stuff. Like that's actually a quite cool way to make things a little different, right? Like that's kind of a thing that could be, or that could be some sort of signature thing of the 21s collection, right? Like if you look at collections we have in the market or in the space, even if you look at people like Daisy or Maria, like her muses are always like looking very similar in terms of, you know, the positioning and everything. So maybe that's like a next cool thing that could be done. But I guess it's been like from like the work effort you had to put in, it was a lot more work, right?
It's always a lot more work, yeah. I mean, you're comparing, you know, two different styles and two different ways of creating. And, you know, like if you're a comic artist and you're used to drawing those characters, you can sit down and draw them as, you know, as they exist in the lore, because you've seen it 1,000 different ways and 1,000 times across different comics and different panels. But when you're trying to make something that exists in people's mind look like something else, but keep its essence, it's really difficult. And that's why when we were talking so much about like Seven Dawns, having the pieces emote, this is really what makes the art something other than just colors on the page, right? So how do I make the piece emote? Well, I need to find the essence of the piece. Like if I'm talking to 100 people about, I don't know, Harry Potter, which, you know, that's one of those things where like if I ask 100 people about Harry Potter, what would be his most distinctive characteristics? You know, they might say, well, he has glasses or he has a scarf or whatever, you know, he's got a wand, you know, and all of those things are true. But how do I need to arrange those things in such a way that it gives me some sort of Harry Potter emotive experience, right? Because when you're watching the films, I never read the books, but when you watch the movies, you know, he's almost like a teenage action hero, right? Like he's always doing something to try to save the school or, you know, save the world or whatever. You know, like they're always in some sort of adventure. So it's not just him sitting there holding something static, right? That doesn't really convey the energy of the character. So how do I convey the energy of the character? I need to make it move somehow. And it's hard to make a character look like it's moving if you don't put a lot of thought into, you know, what those scenes might like look like in someone's imagination. If he's just holding a wand, which I see this a lot, like when people do the characters and they'll do the, you know, like they'll convert Harry Potter, or they'll do their character as Harry Potter or whatever. And it's just their character holding a wand. And it's like, okay, well, you have a huge opportunity here. You could at least like make it look like the wand is moving, like give it a little trail, do something, like, you know, make it look like the piece is active. So like part of Harry Potter's essence is his activity, right? And his adventurousness. But if you just throw up your character wearing his costume holding a steel wand, it's just like, okay, well, he's wearing a Harry Potter costume, cool. It's cool, but, you know, it doesn't really capture the essence.
Yeah, come to think of it, like that's what most artists do, right?
When they exactly when they what try they do. To, yeah.
Yeah. You see that all the time when you see these characters from pop culture. I mean, it's probably I'm not sure if it's like easier than creating some sort of motion, but it's definitely like when I think about pieces and I compare that to have one that, you know, at least like hints to emotion, it's like so much better, right? And I think this is something, I imagine like you did the Chewbacca Han Solo piece, you know, with them standing straight in PFP-ish position, you know, doing nothing.
That would suck.
I bet they wouldn't be on Mark's wall right now.
No, that would be terrible. I mean, that would be absolutely terrible. I mean, like, you know, that whole thing from Star Wars, like everybody knows Star Wars for the most part. And that whole team of, you know, Luke, Han, Chewie, Leia, that's like the Star Wars adventure team. That's really, you know, they're like they're the ones always out in the world, you know, finding adventure and, you know, getting in fights and, you know, running from the bad guys and, you know, like saving the princess. Like the whole first movie was about saving the princess, right? Like that's what the whole movie was. And so it's like they're an adventure team. If I put them just basically standing still, what am I doing? I'm basically, you know, I'm removing the essence of the character. It doesn't make any sense. But when you're, you know, when you're doing character art and you just want to throw a piece out there so somebody will bid on it, that's what you do. You throw it up, you know, you put in enough stuff so the people know who or what it is, and then, you know, you sell it and then you go on to the next thing. And that's a very different thing than when, like, you sit down and you want to try to capture the essence of a character in a still image. It's very difficult to do. And, you know, you can have a great eye for composition. Like a lot of the, you know, since we're using Harry Potter as an example, I see a lot of great Harry Potter compositions, but I don't see a lot of great Harry Potter compositions that capture that essence of adventure. It's very flat, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, so we can conclude there's so many great things you can do, actually. And I'm looking forward to a year full of art, of course. Towards the end, we'll have October again. This is definitely something we'll do. We'll have May the 4th, of course. We will have plenty of artist incubator drops. So a lot to come in 2026. And, you know, it always gets harder to top the past year. But I'm very confident. I think we got some great things planned. We had some great ideas yesterday on the meeting. And yeah, I'm looking forward, man. I couldn't be more excited. And at some point, this thing here will go video as well. And, you know, trying to bring every aspect of the project to the next level, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Video's next. I got to set my office up. I've got a massive shelf in there full of, like, books and comics I got to get out of there. Because, you know, I just want to, like, basically set up a decent-looking backdrop and, you know, make it look a little bit more professional and add in a little bit more production value. So we'll play with that this year, of course. And I've been wanting to do my office anyway, so I'm going to get on that. And yeah, we'll definitely elevate the game, continue to push. But of course, the big things are like pushing the narrative, pushing the website to the next level, which we talked about yesterday. It's going to be a big thing that we need to work on. And then, of course, finalizing all the core upgrades. That's the big thing that I have to finish. And there's going to be a lot of work around, you know, converting that metadata over from, like, the old characters had, like, I don't know, 8 traits, 9 traits, something like that in total. The new ones have upwards of 20. So converting all that data, making sure it's not off, is a bit of a challenge. But I think I can get all of that stuff read in from the existing data and then, of course, map it correctly and drop all of those pieces into a wallet that we can start distroing pretty soon. So I'll probably start working on that before month end. And then the last piece would just be the Soul Rockers pieces. And then everything will be on core. And then we'll be at that place where, you know, where everything is at the same technical level. And we can start playing with the interplay amongst the collections using the metadata, using wallet viewers, and then, of course, using like the non-staking staking to create rewards so people can, you know, earn Aurum and mint artwork in that token. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of stuff on the go. The big thing is just maintaining the basics and elevating those. And then, of course, you know, continuing to push and push and push for effective creation and effective, you know, growth of the project. That's really what this year is going to be about and should be a fun year. I think crypto is going to take off here in the next little bit. So should be good times.
Absolutely. Can't wait to, you know, finally bring everything to core, get it converted. You're kind of like putting a little pressure on me with the background thing, but I'll work on it and then we'll see. So this should be it for today, fellas. Hope you guys are having a great week. We look forward to see you guys on Friday Spaces, of course. And yeah, have a good week, everyone. Bye-bye.
Take care, guys.